And welcome to the HalfGuard.com Power Hour. This week, talking rule changes in sports. And I'm joined by my co-host, Dan Ford.
How y'all doing?
We're going to talk about some major rule changes in sports. But I want to let's stay in the now for a second, Dan. Because I don't think LeBron James is going to overcome the odds like John Cena this time.
Well, John Cena, you know, R-Truth's favorite wrestler when he was a kid, you mean?
Yeah. John Cena, the guy who, like, looks like he's going to play Ronald Reagan in a biopic. You see that new picture of him with the hair?
Yeah, that's not real hair, right? That's clearly, like, a wig
he started
wearing.
I don't know. I'll tell you this. John Cena should play Ronnie Reagan in a biopic if we're going to do that. Like, he, to me, kind of looks like a young Reagan.
He's too muscular, isn't he?
I mean, man, that's... The Reagan I remember was muscular.
Well, the Reagan I remember had a barely functioning brain.
Yeah, the Reagan I remember was dead before, like, I could even talk.
Reagan lived a lot longer than you remember.
No, he was dead in, like, 87.
Reagan,
weekend at Bernie's.
Yeah, he was brain dead in 87. Like, he had Alzheimer's starting in, like, 83, I think his son ended up
saying. Jelly beans, yeah.
Like, that's the funniest thing about America. A man who had literal pudding for brains, who could not tell you his own name, won the biggest landslide election in the history of America in 84.
And twice, almost. It's not like that second election was close.
No, 84 is when he won re-election. That was his second
term. Okay. Yeah,
he won, like, every state but one or something.
Yeah, he kicked out against Carter, he won every state but Georgia.
Now, no, he didn't. Carter won a lot more than one state.
Was it Dukakis? Who's the guy he ran against the second
time? Mondale only won his home state.
Yes, and it was, like, what, Minnesota?
I think it was Minnesota.
Who, like, never goes Republican, I think.
Like, he won Massachusetts. Like, that's how bad shit went.
And California.
Well, of course he won
California. California was
people,
Republican.
No, people forget. Like, before the, like, when the Cold War happened, we got rid of a bunch of military bases. I know, it's hard to believe America would ever get rid of military bases. But when we got rid of, when the Cold War ended, we closed a bunch of bases, and a lot of them were in California, and then all of these troops moved out of California. And so suddenly, like, California got, like, 87% less Republican.
And, it was like amnesty was a big factor in that, too, I think.
Yeah, Reagan's amnesty added a bunch of Latino voters. And it added a bunch of Latino voters, and then the California governor in the 90s, Pete Wilson, basically ran on an amendment that would make being Latino illegal. Like, it was one of these, like, really insane California amendments they do every now and again.
Yeah.
And it basically flipped the state. But, yeah, like, the California was a pretty rock-solid Republican state for a very long time.
Well, people forget this, Dan. California founded to be what? A white supremacist state. Or L.A. was.
L.A. was founded as a white supremacist. Basically, they advertised all over the country, move to L.A., you won't have to look at non-whites. Which was a hilarious lie, because then all of these like racists from Iowa, like Walt Disney, moved to California and then find all these fucking Mexicans and queers running around.
Also, too, like, but
and they,
like,
if and they find out that, like, the biggest industry in California is run entirely by Jews, and they're horrified.
You also find, if you, like, talk to, like, white people from California, you will hear, like, way more racist shit than if you.
Oh, the most psychotically racist people in America are all Californians.
Yeah, because, like, people from, like, Alabama, like, just don't like other people. Half of the issue with, like, Southern racism, I think, sometimes is, like, most Southerners don't like anybody. Because we're just, it's hot and fuck you. And we're tired of being fucking polite. Like out west racists, though, are, like, genetic, like, they're genetically inferior type of people. You kind of know what I'm saying?
Yeah, they're like literal Nazis. Like, I'm going to join up with, like,
yeah.
The American Nazi Party racists.
Like, a racist Southerner now is, like, just, I should say the N-word, whatever, like. And that's kind of where it ends.
There's white N-words and black N-words. That's my favorite. Yeah.
But, like, it ends there, right? And then, like, one on the West Coast is, like, let's, like, get the science behind, like, why black people are bad. And it's like, no one down here is thinking that much about being a racist, dude.
Yeah.
We're not thinking that much at all.
But then it's funny how, like, the image of racism is always, like, a southerner. When, like, really the face of, like, racist America is a dude from Anaheim.
Oh, really?
He's, like, pissed off that, like, blacks are allowed to go to the same pool as his kids.
Or it's Joe Biden.
Hot damn. We're really getting far afield on this here sports podcast of ours.
Yeah, let's jump. Because originally we were trying to talk about basketball.
Yeah.
The Lakers aren't going to make the playoffs. Oh, this is my comparison, because LeBron James kind of is the John Cena of this era of basketball, right? Like, the
always guy disrespected.
Always disrespected, half booed, half cheered. As he gets older, you're kind of like, oh, wow, he was really good. Like, what have we done?
Yeah, the older he gets, the more you start to, the more you realize you're going to miss him when he's gone, because the next generation are all, like, moody shitheads.
Yeah.
Like, you start realizing, oh, God, I don't want John Cena to be replaced with, like, CM Punk. Never hear the end of it.
Or Kevin Durant.
Kevin Durant, the moodiest motherfucker in the
but
history.
But also
of the
guy who would always overcome the odds. Because it was like, can LeBron James do it? And it's like, yeah.
Yeah.
Especially with the Cavs.
Pretty much can.
With the Lakers, nope. I watched that game against the Clippers. It's probably been like two or three nights ago. I think it was Monday night. And, it's pretty wild. We live in a world where the Clippers are a better-run basketball organization than the Lakers at this point. That might be
literally the only thing holding the Clippers back is, like, years of their brand just being shit.
Yeah, because of their, like, awful racist owner.
Like, Ballmer's going to have to spend years not just being, like, really competent and smart, but, like, proving he's competent and smart over and over and over again.
Yeah,
just to erase decades. But
this decade, I think the Clippers are probably better. The Lakers in the tens, besides what, the Kobe championship in 2010.
Yeah.
So I think, I don't know, that'd be a fun show to look at, like rivals or teams that like used to be really bad that like jumped their rivals in the place in line.
Yeah.
You know, it's almost like if, like, the Mets one day, like, 10 years from now, are like, wow, the Mets are so much better than the Yankees.
That was the Mets in the 80s, though.
Yeah. And then they're the Mets, so they screwed it up. So maybe the Clippers will, but it looks like the Clippers going to make the playoffs, even when they look like they were maybe trying to tank. So I think that says a lot about, like, how well they're run right now. The Lakers, though, are not run well.
No.
And a lot of people get mad at the young kids around LeBron. It's the veterans that suck. And, like, it's not the young guy's fault that, like, they signed a free agent who needs to be surrounded by three-point shooters. And all of the guys they drafted are, like, athletic, you know, get-to-the-hole kind of players.
Yeah, it's almost like the guys making the decisions about who to sign are idiots or something.
Yeah, and didn't have a plan at all.
It's almost like Magic Johnson's just a famous former player. And really shouldn't be in charge of your direction.
Yeah. When's the NBA going to kind of learn that? That, like, maybe stop hiring former players.
Or...
Except Elton Brand.
Or you just got to make sure that your former player is surrounded by people who act... Like, this is what we were talking about before the thing. Because the Danny Ainge, although he is a former player, he is like the prototypical, like, autistic NBA guy. Like,
no, I think the comparison is like he's like Bain Capital.
Yeah, he's like the business degree shithead who's like does not give a shit about chemistry or anything else.
He's like the business degree guy who comes into a business is like, well, I know how to do all this. Like, there's an episode of King of the Hill that really attacks us well, where like the head of Strickland Propane, Buck Strickland, has a heart attack, and some guy with a business degree takes over. And he realizes, hey, we need to put tabblers, you know, in all the truckers' cars to make sure they don't make any unscheduled stops. So all the truckers quit. That's kind of what Danny Ainge is. Like, a guy who like, comes in with all the numbers, and this makes sense on paper, but in reality, you have to deal with, like, humans who have emotions and feelings.
And it's like, what you need to do is take, like, one of those autistic guys like that, and then pair them with a magic who all you do is just pay him to, like, shake hands with players and, like, get them to trust him.
Yeah.
But then you have somebody else, like, make the decision about which player to actually go do that with.
Yeah.
Because, like, the Danny Ainge types can't get a real free agent to want to come play for him.
No,
because it's like, why would I want to play for Danny Ainge? He'll immediately try to trade me for...
No, it looks like what's happened with Boston. Like I said, the focus with the LA is, like, on their young guys not playing well, which is, like, BS, because all the young guys are just hurt. But, like, the ones who, like, really got hurt by the trade rumors were, like, the Boston guys. That's who started playing pretty bad around that time. It was guys like Tatum or Brown or Terry Rozier who maybe were playing above their talent level last year, but like have definitely regressed and like regressed further when all those trade rumors kind of started up. Because they know more than anyone else, Ainge will get rid of you because they saw what happened to Isaiah Thomas.
Yeah, and before, and it's not just Isaiah Thomas. It's also Rondo. Who was like clearly one of their like their cornerstone players when they made their title run, and every single year they dangled him in trade rumors.
Yeah, and Ray Allen, who left over like not getting along with Rondo, who like maybe thought he was treated weird too or something. So like,
well, it's like they kind of poisoned Rondo's attitude, and then Rondo started acting like a dick. And it was like, well, yeah, because every year you're threatening to trade him, like. You know, it's
which
just
is
like
always wild because like if you watch those games, it's like I don't know, maybe the analytics don't back me up, but like it feels like Rondo was like the engine or the glue that made all that work.
Yeah, because Paul Pierce was like almost completely washed up. Kevin Durant was like 70% washed up, and Ray Allen at that point was just a curl and shoot guy. Yeah. And it was Rondo that kind of made the offense function.
Or played D.
Or played any kind of D, yeah.
Yeah.
Because Paul Pierce and Ray Allen weren't playing D at that point.
Yeah. So, yeah, a lot of wild stuff in the NBA is, like, weird. We're kind of hitting the home stretch. Like, I can't remember an NBA March that has been, like, as interesting as this one.
Yeah, I agree.
And the playoffs, you never know. Because Golden State's at that weird point where, like, they probably should win. But it's so hard.
But everybody on their team hates each other right now because Kevin Durant is a fucking team cancer.
Yeah. And it's really hard to do three in a row, and it's not because these teams aren't capable of doing it talent-wise. Like, weird stuff happens. Like,
yeah, your second-best player randomly decides he wants to play for the worst franchise in the sport.
Are the Knicks the worst in the NBA now?
Yeah, now that the Clippers are gone, yeah.
We're good.
Yeah, now that the Clippers are no longer run by a fat idiot racist.
Maybe the Suns.
I mean, as bad as Robert Sarver is, like, the Knicks, the Dolan has an extra decade of doing this.
But Sarver, like, what's that story that just came out? He filled a guy's room?
He filled the former GM's office with goats to send a message that he needed to find a goat for this team. Like a greatest of all time for this team, and Goats did what
worse
you
than anything because like Dolan like just makes you listen to his shitty music. Give me that over like.
Well, then and he just like randomly fires everybody and then forces you to sign 17 point guards.
You know who he didn't fire though, Dan. He didn't fire Isaiah Thomas Part One. he was with the Knicks for what 8 years?
Yeah.
Like. The guy who probably put them in the position they're in now.
Like the single most incompetent person to ever run a major sports franchise.
Next to like maybe like Phil Jackson. Who else did who is like the triangle offense, this will work. It's never worked anywhere else except when I had
Yeah, literally nobody has ever won anything running the triangle option except teams coached by me, and I don't want to coach this team.
And I also happen to have probably two of the top five players in the league on my team every time.
Do you remember when he all like everyone thought he was going to sign Steve Kerr, and then Steve Kerr at the last minute said, "No, fuck, I'm going to Golden State."
Going to Golden State. Fuck this.
And it was like, man, you know, how could he turn down the chance to be back in New York with Phil Jackson? It's like, yeah, because Phil Jackson was going to make him run this shitty offense from like 20 years ago.
Yeah, and I get to go coach the best player in the league, maybe in Steph Curry, or I could coach Carmelo Anthony. That's not a knock on Melo. Saying like Curry, you could see the truth with Curry at that point. Like, this guy is maybe the best player in the league, even back then.
It's basically like, what if you were a football coach and you got offered to come coach a football team, but you had to run the exact same offense Bill Walsh ran in 1986.
Bill Gates.
Yes, you have to run the Bill Gates offense from 1986.
The Bill Gates offense.
You got to boot up DOS.
From Little Giants when he was head coach.
Sure. But yeah, you got to line up like a Bill Walsh team from 1987, and like your only formation is split backs. And you like 50% of your runs is a power sweep, which like nobody runs anymore. But hey, you know, this worked in 1986. How can you doubt it?
So yeah, I forgot my main point. My main point here is like the NBA, really fun right now. Maybe it's just me, but I feel like this is the more interesting sports league of this like calendar sports year.
We've had some wild shit happen. There's no doubt about it. I feel like if Golden State just puts their stuff together and then just foes the playoffs, we'll pretend this conversation never happened. But I don't feel like that's going to happen.
I think the regular season has been a lot. I think we'll look back and think, man, the regular season is a lot. Here's my point. Golden State has maybe made a lot of us appreciate like how fun the regular season can be when we know like the playoffs might just be inevitable. You know, who's going to win? So they've been really good for that, to the point where people are like locked in March when like maybe 5-6 years ago you won.
Yes. Yeah, when the playoffs was super exciting and then everyone just pretended like the regular season was just a thing you had to gut through. Whereas now it's like, well, let's try to enjoy the regular season while there's still, like, hope something else can happen.
Yeah, because we can trick ourselves into thinking Golden State won't do anything. And then we'll watch them in, what, late April and be like, oh, no. Boogie Cousins is really good. We forget.
Yeah. Like, oh, they just added, like, the best center in the NBA is, like, their ninth man. This sucks.
Oh, and it's like, oh, man, these guys have, like, done this a lot before. Maybe they just weren't trying that hard in February.
Yeah.
Because they knew they would have to play, like, 20 extra games in the summer.
And Draymond Green just suddenly morphs back into old Draymond Green.
Yeah, it's like maybe this 29-year-old was saving his body.
Yeah.
When it mattered. This didn't give me the segue I think I was fishing for, but who cares? Let's talk some rule changes.
Let's hit it.
All right, let's talk the first big one. I think this is, in terms of changing a lot, was a really big deal that we don't talk about enough. And that's college football getting rid of time.
That's pretty far along in the history of rule changes.
Well, no, this isn't chronological. This is a free-flowing, abstract conversation.
This sounds like the old Bill Simmons thing that they used to put on his ESPN podcast, where they would warn you up top. This is an adult, free-flowing conversation.
Billionaires can pay for their own fucking stadiums.
Viewer discretion is advised. It was like, just to make sure that if you have your kid downloading podcasts from ESPN.
Well, no, I think
like,
a lot of
Bill Simmons may do a swear.
People listen to podcasts in the cars with kids.
But I feel like everybody who listens to podcasts kind of knows, okay, these aren't on the radio. You can swear on them.
Yeah, well, okay. Listen, I think it was really nerdy, but I like the warning. This was like before podcasts were getting big.
So. Well, I guess most of ESPN's podcasts at that point were just like PTI in audio form, and then like condensed versions of their radio shows with like all the bullcrap conversations nobody ever listened to taken out.
Condensed Mike and Mike
show. Yeah, it's just like the 30 minutes of Mike and Mike every day that are kind of halfway interested. turned
into a podcast. No, it's just 30 minutes of Greeny going, I'm skinny, Golic's fat, for 30 minutes.
I'm a nerd, he was a jock.
Have you listened to that show since Trey Wingo took over?
The only thing I've heard about Trey Wingo is when Spencer Hall roasted him for his shitty-looking steak.
Steak, yes. Because Trey Wingo's like a conservative guy, isn't he?
I didn't know that.
Did he do something?
I'm not aware of that.
He did something that was like, oh, this guy's old. But,
I mean, he's from Washington State, isn't he? I mean, I don't think he's from Tennessee. Is he? I'm getting him confused with Kenny Mayne.
Yeah, well, Kenny Mayne's from, like, Seattle. And Kenny Mayne's, like, very liberal. I actually unfollowed Kenny Mayne because his, like, tweets about Trump get so annoying. And I don't like Trump.
Well, Kenny Mayne, is Kenny Mayne, like, the all-time, God, you gotta listen to this dude, he's super funny. And then you listen to him, and it's like, I don't get this.
No, I thought Kenny Mayne was really funny, but, like, you don't hype up Kenny Mayne. It's just funny because, like, he popped up in, like, a very mundane situation.
It's like those commercials Kenny Mayne does are just brutal. IMO.
Yes. I did like his stuff on, like, NFL. Like, NFL Countdown, when it's, like, Rush Limbaugh, like, yelling about black people for an hour, while Tom Jackson just is like, what the fuck am I doing here? Then they cut to, like, Kenny Mayne taking Marshawn Lynch to Applebee's in Buffalo. That was very funny and delightful.
You have mixed a bunch of different eras together that did not overlap.
This all happened on one show, I'm pretty sure. How long was Rush Limbaugh? Remember?
4 weeks. He was only on the show for 4 weeks.
Why do you think that was a good idea, America? Like,
all TV executives are old white Republicans.
That's always wild to me when, like, people are like, ESPN's too liberal. And it's like, they used to have, like, one of the most conservative, like, most famous conservative people in entertainment on their show. And, like, would have kept him if he, like, just wasn't racist.
Like, he could not go a whole one season without saying something racist.
Like, why do we always excuse McNabb? And it's like,
the media just wants there to be a black quarterback. And it's like, oh my God, what the fuck are you talking about?
And, like, we've had black quarterbacks.
And, like, Dennis Miller, like, got a job talking about Monday Night Football, even though he's a fucking... he's never watched a sporting event in his life, and it was immediately obvious he had never watched a sporting event in his life. And he's, like, the dumbest guy in the world.
But you know what? I'm going to call an audible on this show.
Hit me with this audible.
Let's audible. We didn't plan for this at all. But who are some of the biggest busts in, like, sports broadcasting entertainment? Like, people who came in.
This is a better topic.
Yeah, like, people who came in, like, really hyped and just were disastrous. I think early on when they put Bill Simmons on, like, NBA Countdown.
Anytime Bill Simmons has ever done television, it's been a disaster. Yeah.
I thought his stuff with, like, Jalen Rose was good. But, like, that was, like, a little more just in-depth than, like, on ESPN2.
Are we sure that just wasn't because he had Jalen Rose? And Jalen Rose is just a really good on television.
Simmons was better in, like, a niche format. It was just a lot different. I don't know how to describe, like, how I feel about Bill Simmons on that, if that makes sense. But it's,
he's terrible on television.
But he's just better when he's not supposed to be good. You know what I'm, like, when he's the niche thing? Almost when he's, like, Kenny Mayne-ing it, if you will. It's like, here's a segment with Bill Simmons.
Even going back to his writing career, which he now makes fun of how he doesn't write anything anymore. Yeah. He was never able to make a point in a brief amount of time. Like, he was the king of taking, like, 20,000 words to say something everybody else could have said in 15. And guess what? TV, you don't get to say 20,000 words to make your point. Like, that's not how TV works. You've got to make your point quickly. And he was never good at that as a writer. So why would he be good at that on television?
Yeah. Like, he was always better. I thought when he did, like, ESPN.com or YouTube stuff. Like, that's where Simmons
was. Or his podcast. Like, his podcast has always done well. And it's because, you've got an hour to make your point.
Yeah.
And you can bring on, like, guests to make sense for you.
Yeah. And, like, that's Simmons' strength. Like, you know, we bash Simmons a lot. But I think it's because, like, Bill Simmons was so important, probably to both of our sports fandoms.
Exactly. Like, and he's just kind of gotten lame as he's gotten older. Like,
you know what? Remember when he used to make fun of, like, Rick Riley?
Well, he's never gotten as bad as Rick Riley.
But he's turned into, like, Rick Riley, where he's just, like, which is, like, cool, because, like, Bill Simmons got old and cashed out. Now he's super rich and not relatable to me. But, guess what? I would do the same thing.
I'll say this. He is a much better editor than, like, any of the people he used to make fun of were.
Yes.
Like, he's gotten good at just, like, okay, I'm no, my takes are no longer interesting. But he still has an idea of what a good take is, and he just hires people who are, like, much more interesting.
Yeah. So real quick though, let's jump back in time and let's talk about, like, Rush Limbaugh and.
Well, I mean, when you talk about, like, the all time biggest failures in the history of, like, broadcasting, I would say the guy who's absolutely up there is Joe Namath, because Joe Namath was easily the most famous football player of his era, like, by a country mile.
No, and, like,
kind of revolutionized the way people talked about pro sports.
Yeah, and, like, was famous for talking.
Was famous for talking, was famous for being a sexy motherfucker. And they put him on Monday Night Football, and I'm sure everybody thought, this is the no-brainer to end all no-brainers. Like, he's the most famous football player of all time. And he was so brutal that they did, like, they only kept him on for, like, a season. He got Jason Witten'd because it was like, oh my God, we can't keep doing this. We can't put him out there for, like, he might have gotten a second season, but he did not last because you couldn't. It was so brutal. He was such a terrible commentator.
And, like, from what I was saying, it was really bad, but I think back then too, the backlash, like, wasn't as strong as, say, it was, like, with Witten. Because, like, it's not that people were nicer, it's just social media didn't exist.
Well, there's no, like, how were you supposed to let ABC know?
Yeah.
You know.
A letter.
Like, yeah, what are you going to do, write letters like a psychopath?
Like a nerd?
Like my favorite person in the world, David Bixenspan?
Yeah. So let's stick with Monday.
David Bixenspan. Bixenspan wrote letters to editors when he was a kid. I guarantee that.
He probably still does. So let's stick with Monday Night Football. Is there another famous bust besides Dennis Miller?
Well, Joe Namath, Dennis Miller, Dan Dierdorf. Like, people forget, Dan Dierdorf has ended up having a long career in commentating, but Dan Dierdorf on the Monday Night Football was absolutely a giant failure, because that was the era where everybody was trying to find the next John Madden. So it was like, let's hire a football guy who's a real big expert on football. And then they kept doing that, and, like, most of these guys were, like, completely boring and had no personality. And, like, Dan Dierdorf is one of those guys who was just like, well, he could perfectly describe to you how to block Power O, but it, like, could not form a sentence about anything interesting.
All right, real quick, here are just some guys who lasted a year at color. And, like, Monday Night Football, if you look at, like, guys who did play-by-play, like, all during the ABC era, five guys. The guys who did color, 16 different color men. And was that from 1970 to, like, what, 2005? You went through. Here's some one-year busts, really. You mentioned Namath. Not Frank Gifford, but Dan Fouts lasted 1 year. Boomer Esiason lasted 1 year. Dennis Miller lasted 1 year.
And Dan Fouts has had a long career, you know, calling college games, but...
Yeah.
You know, it was just another guy who just lacked something. You know, he's just a famous quarterback. That's about it.
Yeah, and I think Monday Night Football's hurt because the game's always so boring.
Well, that's not true. Because before NBC, Monday Night Football got the premier game.
Oh, that's right.
Like back in the day, Sunday Night Football used to be on... It used to be split. ESPN. Half the season it'd be on ESPN and half the season it'd be on TNT. Which which meant it got the shit game of the week.
Do you remember this? Tony Kornheiser.
Tony almost felt like he got sabotaged.
Yes, like Tony Kornheiser did not belong in the Monday Night Football booth. I want to talk about this one though. Dennis Miller, because it's the most oddball one, right?
The Dennis Miller one was. Dennis Miller was the most out of left field, because that was the thing about Monday Night Football is what you got to remember about the original version of it is that it was Frank Gifford, it was Don Meredith, so you had two former players, and then you had Howard Cosell, who was probably the most famous sports talker of his day, but was not a quote-unquote football guy.
Yeah.
You know, he was, I think, primarily just known for boxing. But, you know, he was, you know, he gave Monday Night Football a certain, like, gravitas that, yeah. like, it didn't otherwise have, because people thought of Howard Cosell. Oh, that's the guy who interviews, you know, Muhammad Ali.
No. But he thought, like, Cosell is, like, who's one of those famous news guys from back in the day? Like,
he was like the Ted Koppel of football.
Yeah, like Ted Cobb. Like, people trusted.
Well, a lot of people hated him because he was a New York Jew boy.
Yeah, but he didn't lie. He told it like it was. So, like, you kind of trusted Cosell. Even if you disagreed with him, you knew, like, Cosell wasn't going to bullshit you.
I don't know if people trusted him. There's a lot of people who hated Howard Cosell. Like, he was the classic.
He told it like it was.
He was the classic New York Jew liberal.
But he also, like, told it how it was.
But you know, tell it like it is.
Because, like, if the game sucked, he'd be like, this game sucks.
Yes, he would, like, not mince words about, this game is an abomination. Like, he famously quit calling boxing, because, like, in the middle of a boxing match that was, like, one dude was just getting the shit kicked out of him. He went, if this referee doesn't stop this fight, I will never call a boxing match again. And the referee didn't stop it, and so he never called another boxing match.
Yeah. But, like, big point of, like, a lot of this, though, is, like, Cosell, Meredith, and Gifford, to an extent, were, like, the reason Monday Night Football kind of took off. Because it wasn't just, oh, it's football. It's, like, you have these dynamic personalities.
Yeah, like, Frank Gifford was, like, a really boring play-by-play guy who had been the most famous football player in America. Because he played for the New York Giants.
Yeah, and the thing with, like...
And Don Meredith... Don Meredith was, like, the classic Southern good old boy, like, fun-loving
dude.
Dandy
Don.
Yeah, he just wanted to drink and party and have fun.
Yeah. So you had,
and then you had Howard Cosell, who, like, added a whole other element to the broadcast.
Yeah, because, like, the whole point of Monday Night Football, like, wasn't to get football fans to watch. It was, like, casual fans who were like, I'll watch sports once a week. This is wild. You know, and, like, that's kind of what you wanted when you were building, like, the blueprint for Monday Night Football back then was, like, let's get
something on ABC other than the Disney movie of the week.
Yeah, and, like, let's present football in a way that might appeal to, like, housewives.
Yeah.
So to speak. Because we just have dynamic personalities. They lost a lot of this in the 80s and 90s. So was it around 2000, 1999? ABC gets the idea. Well, let's recreate it.
I mean, I definitely think they looked at Dennis Miller as like, well, he can be a modern day Howard Cosell. Which,
no,
to throw you back, like,
to
remind you of what Dennis Miller was at the time. He basically was doing Bill Maher's show before Bill Maher. Yeah. Only it was more right wing than Bill Maher's show.
But, like, America was a lot more right wing then, too.
And it was like that, it was like a different kind of right wing that it doesn't really exist anymore. It was like this 90s libertarian right wing where it was like, well, you know, Newt Gingrich is a piece of shit, but, you know, also, why are they telling us we can't smoke? You know, it was it was a lot of, like, politics rooted in, they're telling me I can't light a cigarette. Like, it's a whole politics around, why do I have to wear a seatbelt? You know?
Yeah, but, like, it was, like, a more relatable, I think, version of conservatism back then, if that makes sense.
It was a much more, like, populism friendly version. Like, it wasn't talking about how we should, you know, tax billionaires less. It was,
well, and it wasn't, like, rooted in, like, a lot of bigotry. Like, Dennis Miller, like, wasn't, like, a big Islamophobe back then or something. So, like, you didn't watch Dennis Miller and you're like, well, he's Republican, but whatever.
Yeah, he wasn't constantly like ranting about the god dang Muslims have to be stopped.
Yeah, so like this is a guy who like you can put it's a corporate kind of friendly comedian you can put somewhere and like people are gonna watch him, right?
That's right. Fair to say.
So you get this. You're gonna pair him with Al Michaels. Maybe the greatest sportscaster of all time.
Another Republican.
Mm-hmm.
And, so you paired him up with another Republican guy. And then who was the football guy in there? Was it Deardorff?
No. Dang. I'm looking through, but like they interviewed like 20 people. So like Jimmy Johnson, Parcells, Steve Young, Elway, Sterling Sharp almost had the gig.
Former ESPN studio analyst, Sterling Sharp.
Yeah, and originally they wanted Miller to, like, kind of come in and do, like, his little rant segments that he was famous for back then.
Did you ever own any of the Dennis Miller Rants books?
I believe my dad had one.
Where it's just like, oh, Dennis Miller, he's going to rant again like he did last summer.
Yeah. So they brought, that's when they brought in Dan Fouts. So it's Dan Fouts, Dennis Miller, Al Michaels.
So you just got, like, a wet piece of light bread, and then Dennis Miller, like, somehow comparing football, like, somehow comparing a football game to the Bolshevik War, cha-cha.
Yeah.
Something that doesn't even make any sense to anybody watching. And, there, like, his HBO show was just him, like, endlessly making references to things that nobody knew what the fuck he was talking about, but it's a bunch of, like, people who, like, it's a bunch of middle brow, like, college educated HBO viewers who want to pretend they know what he's talking about.
Okay, thought it was like, cool. Here's some stuff from the Wikipedia page on, like, what Dennis Miller would say on Monday Night Football. After a Hail Mary fell incomplete, he would say, "Hail Mary is denied separation of church and state." He referred to the greatest show on turf as the Murderer's Row of Haste.
What does that even mean?
Exactly.
Like, what are you even talking about? I think a particular podcast, famous for celebrating drug dealers, once pointed out that if Dennis Miller started having a stroke in the middle of his radio show, you'd have no idea. Like, he would absolutely just stroke out and die because no one would have any idea that anything bad's happening to him. Because how could you tell?
So basically, Dennis Miller experiment didn't work at all. Pretty much a disaster. And the next year, ABC got the guy they probably should have gotten the whole time, John Madden. They're like, duh. That's the guy people... It's like, if you were building Monday Night Football today, like, you go get Romo. Because people like Tony Romo.
Yeah.
People like John Madden. Your mom likes Tony Romo. Your mom likes John Madden.
I also want to point out, he was terrible on Monday Night Football.
Who, Madden?
Yeah, John Madden trying to, like, do a broadcast at that stage of his life without Pat Summerall was really painful to listen to.
Yeah. Oh, so it was like watching the corpse of Pat Summerall, like, dry out for, like, Cardinals games in 2000. Bad too.
How dare you? Pat Summerall is a real hero.
But I agree.
To everybody who never knew how to have any emotion in their voice.
But Madden and Al Michaels, I wouldn't call that a bust, but like that's a pairing that never worked either, really. Like I think the Madden coming to Sunday Night Football.
It was clear he should have just retired.
Yeah, it worked because of the brand, if I'm John Madden, why would you retire? Like, you're getting paid millions to work.
Yeah, it was clear that, like, him and Pat Summerall should have just gone out together.
Yeah.
You know, they should have just finished up together because, like, they, by the end there, neither one of them was making a lot of sense, but, like, you just dealt with it because they were, like, your old uncles.
Yeah.
And even when your uncles start, like, losing their minds, you're just like, well, they're my old uncles. I love them. But when it's like suddenly, if like your uncles stopped hanging out together, and you know, or if like your uncles got divorced at like 80, you'd be like, "Well, what the hell are you doing, Uncle Joffrey, or whatever your uncle's name is?"
Yeah,
you'd be so confused.
But around this time, ESPN. So this must have been like a Disney directive for sports. ESPN brings in Rush Limbaugh, who we alluded to earlier, who lasted, what, 4 whole weeks?
And, on Sunday Night Countdown.
Yeah, before which he got... had, like, what did they do with him? He had, like, a booth, and, like, he would throw
no,
a flag.
No, he was there at the seat. He was there at the thing with everybody else.
I thought they did something where, like, he was away from everybody, but then, like, chimed in.
No, he was sitting at the table with everybody.
Okay.
But he didn't talk a lot. Like, he would just sort of sit there and throw something in.
Yeah, and this is, like, the comments that got him in, like, huge trouble when they talk about McNabb. This is quoting Rush Limbaugh. Sorry to say this. I don't think he's been that good from the get-go. I think what we've had here is a little social concern in the NFL. The media has been very desirous that a black quarterback do well. There's a little hope invested in McNabb, and he got a lot of credit for the performance of the team that he didn't deserve. The defense carried this team. Which is like, you could make that point about McNabb without injecting the race part. That's the wild thing to me.
Yeah, to me, like, there's a version that, like, a more sophisticated NFL commentator who knows how race bait does. Where you would just say, look, he's overrated, the defense is doing most of the role, but he's telegenic, and he looks good in commercials, so they try to give him credit.
Which is, like, bullshit, because, A, at this point, McNabb had made 3 Pro Bowls and was runner-up in the MVP awards at this point. But, like, two, they do this race science talk, like, to this day. Listen to a guy talk about Kyler Murray and how, like, he doesn't study well. It's like, how the fuck would you know in a 15-minute interview if the guy studies well?
Yeah, and so much of, like, modern football discussion is based on, well, he's not picking up our shitty West Coast offense playbook that has, like, 14 words used to describe a shallow cross. Like, this... Yeah. Fuck this guy. Like,
that's the issue with, like, how Limbaugh attacked that weird, because, A, he's just, like, an old racist guy, so, like, he doesn't know any better, basically.
Yeah. Also, he got the job because the Rooneys, like, basically put in a good word for him and said, this is a good guy you should hire.
No, and, like, Limbaugh, like, always been, like, associated with the NFL, right? Like,
he would always go to Steelers games. Like, he was really close with the Rooneys.
Yeah. So, like, he's a football, and, like, looking at this, ratings were up 10%. So he did draw a crowd.
Yeah, people were fascinated to see how that was going to go.
Yeah, and I think some of it was like a car crash thing. I would bet by the 4th week the ratings have probably dropped a little bit.
Yeah.
Because this is from the ESPN post about it, I guess.
Also, the other guys on this thing hated him.
Yes.
Like, the black guys obviously hated him for reasons that you probably don't need to explain, but Berman hated him too.
Because he's a fucking hack, and they knew he was a sideshow.
And he didn't really know what he was talking about. Like, he was knowledgeable about football in the way that a guy who, like, maybe listens to a lot of sports talk radio might know a little bit about football. But he wasn't really knowledgeable about football the way, like, other people who would be competing for that spot would be knowledgeable about football. You know what I mean?
And you really want to put Limbaugh, like, with Chris Berman? Like, that's too much alpha right there.
Yeah.
One room.
No one room should have all that alpha.
Let's transition over really quick. And I don't know if you can call him a bust, but I do, because he's more famous for no one being able to understand what he says. Lou Holtz. He's beloved, but, like, he's not very good at it.
As a play-by-play guy, he was a giant failure because just that reason. Nobody could figure out what the fuck he was talking about.
Yeah. And then there's, like, an in-studio guy. Not very good.
How dare,
like,
you?
I think more famous because, like, let's laugh at this old man that no one can understand.
Well, also, he was the head coach of the most popular team in college football.
Moving on really quick. Joe Theismann.
Man, that's the other thing people don't realize about 2019 is that when you have a bad announcer, like, they got Witten out of there in 1 year.
Yeah.
You had to be so bad to get shit canned after 1 year back in the day. Joe Theismann was awful for, like, 2 decades.
They did Theismann and Kornheiser for, like, 3 years on Monday Night Football.
Like, Theismann, you just could not get rid of him. Like, when he was just, like, an ESPN broadcast lifer, and, like, as long as ESPN was broadcasting games, they were going to have Joe Theismann on the broadcast.
Because he did Sunday Night Football, right? And then
yeah, he was the longtime commentator on Sunday Night Football.
Yeah.
And God, he was terrible. Like, he was never good. And he started calling games when he was, like, still with the Redskins, like, as a player.
And didn't he spend a lot of his career, like, just insulting other players?
Yeah, he was like football's version of Rick Barry, where, like, even as a player, he would go and do media stuff and say his teammates sucked. Because he was setting himself up to be a commentator before he even retired. Like,
which, that type of thing's always so wild to me, too. Because, like, if I'm ESPN or NFL or whatever, and you're commentating, it's like what I don't get about the NBA guys today. Why are you bashing the product so much, man? Like, you're bashing the thing we're trying to sell.
Yeah.
Like, people get mad about, like, WWE announcers or whatever, but you know what they don't do? They don't say a match sucks when it sucks. They pretend like it's exciting.
Well, there is something to be said for admitting when something sucks in wrestling. For your credibility's sake.
Nah, fuck that. Push the product, man.
No, I'm a big fan of the Jim Ross, Lance Russell style. Where it's not like you just come right out and say, this sucks. You should never do that. But you just go, this is bowling shoe ugly. That was my favorite Jim Rossism, where it's just like, real bowling shoe ugly match right now. These guys are really, they don't care how it looks. They're just out there trying to fight. You know, and it's just like, that's just like his way of letting you know, yeah, I know this sucks too. Like, don't.
This is kind of almost out of the sports world, but not really. How about Magic Johnson? People forget that Magic Johnson had a late night talk show.
He was brutal. He was brutal as a commentator too.
Yeah. Yeah, Magic Johnson seems like a classic case of like a guy who's fun to talk to, not a guy you want to like have call your game.
Yeah, people confuse like being an engaging conversationalist with somebody who can do television.
Yeah. Let's see. Because what was the show? The Magic Hour, I believe.
Yeah, that sounds right. Was that one of the Fox attempts to have a talk show?
Yes.
Because they tried like 40 different talk shows at one point trying to.
Yeah, and this was in 1998. So this is around the time, I guess, talk shows like. We're getting a little more in vogue or something? Because this is around
basically when it started toward the tail end of Johnny Carson, but it really got big when Johnny Carson retired, where everybody was like, all right, Johnny's gone. Late night's up for grabs. Let's try to get our late night show. Let's try to get our thing that's going to be on late night to, you know, try to get those Johnny Carson viewers. And what we all found out was that, like, well, one, a lot of the people who were watching Johnny Carson were old as shit. And when he retired, they kind of just stopped watching television. Like, the only reason they were still staying up that late was because they'd been watching Johnny Carson for 50 years.
Yeah.
And two, people would rather watch Dave Letterman or Jay Leno. Like, those two kind of all split up the audience between them. There wasn't room for, you know... There wasn't room for a third host. Like, those two had already wrapped it all up.
Yeah. And let's see. The Magic Show lasted one season. It was basically a disaster. Its probably most famous moment is, like, when he kind of got into a weird feud with Howard Stern. Where, like, I think Howard Stern would just be really racist about him on his radio show. And then came on the Magic Hour. So this is probably like a coordinated media feud, I would assume.
Yeah.
A worked shoot, if sure.
Was that before? That seems like that was. No, Howard had already become like a big Letterman guy. So that.
Yeah. Oh, this would have been like obviously like 98, 99.
Yeah, but that was kind of the peak of Howard Stern's popularity because that was like right after the Private Parts. So it makes
sense if you're Magic Johnson to attach your ship to that. Like, duh.
The Howard Stern, like, edited version that would go on television on E! Back in the day might have been doing better ratings than the Magic Hour was.
Yeah, that's always the wild thing. Like, why was Stern not given a late night show? Probably because he's so ugly, I guess. literally just, you can't put that face on TV.
Well, he's also, like, super polarizing because he's a radio guy. It's like the same reason why Rush Limbaugh didn't work on television.
Yeah.
Like, to make it in radio, you kind of have to be a giant dickhead because you have to try to stand out. And yeah. because people will listen to your show and try to call in just to, like, try to outsmart you. That dynamic yeah. doesn't exist in like, people watch, the guys that people watch on television are people that they like. And that doesn't, like, radio, like, there's a lot of hate listening in radio.
Yeah. Well, it's like the famous thing from Private Parts, you know, like, why are these people listening? Well, you know, half of them love it, and half of them want to hear what he says next, because they hate him so much.
I never saw that movie.
It's a good movie.
I was always confused as to why he had so many strippers and porn stars on his radio show.
Because... Don't doubt.
Because it was how like dumb, horny it was always like really confusing to me because you couldn't see them, and they weren't that interesting to talk to. And it was like, why is this on the like? Why is this a thing people are listening to on the radio? I did not get it at all.
Dan, do you remember this? This is from a few years ago when CBS hired Mike Carey as their rules analyst.
God, when you talk about, like, okay, there was a bunch of ABC attempts to try to replace Howard Cosell. Like, oh, let's find the new Howard Cosell, right? Like, they tried Dennis yeah. Miller. They tried Tony Kornheiser. Like, there was a bunch of people they tried. But then, like, nobody has done more damage to a football game than Mike Pereira. Because he's so good at his job because he was the head referee for so long. And he's good on television. But then everybody tried to find, like, well, this is the new Mike Pereira. Like,
no,
we'll have our own Mike Pereira. And all of them are terrible.
No, and they've tried to, like, spin it off. Or, like, remember they had, like, Jay Feely as, like, the kicking analyst? And it's like, why the fuck?
Well, I just want to let you know what it's like to be a kicker. Like, what it's
yeah,
like.
Yeah, it's hard. And it sucks. We know. And it's, like, random. It's like golf. It's, like, random half the time why a kick doesn't go in. We get it.
Yeah, it's all like little tiny adjustments. We get it. That's not.
Yeah, kicking, like. Actually, this show is going to take the opposite standpoint on kicking as most people. Kicking is probably one of the hardest things to fucking do in sports. Consistently kick field goals might be one of the harder things to do. Sorry.
Yeah, especially like you're in pressure situations, and like little tiny tweaks are the difference between a successful kick and a bad kick. It's tough.
Carey was so bad, though, when CBS broadcasted the Super Bowl, there was a prop bet on whether or not he would get a call wrong.
That's funny.
How about this one? Remember Michelle Beadle, big star at ESPN, left to go to NBC, had a show called The Crossover.
Yeah, her whole, like, nobody fucked up their career harder by leaving ESPN than Michelle Beadle.
Yeah. He was, like, back now and, like...
Yeah, but she's not. She's never gotten back to where she was before.
No,
she
like she could kind of be like almost like what Nolan and all those people were before.
Yeah, she was she was Nolan before Nolan.
Yeah, she's like the fun sports lady who like you really believed like loved sports, like wasn't just like a model or something that they're putting on
right.
TV. Like Linda Cohn.
How about Linda Cohn? Anybody who used to listen to a lot of ESPN radio. Just popped for that.
Yeah. How about, I'm going through a list now, but remember ESPN 3D? Sports and three and the third definition?
I do not remember this at all.
This is around the time, like, remember when all the 3D TVs were coming out and you had to wear those stupid glasses that gave you a headache? That had, like, a battery in them? So they probably just gave you cancer, I would assume.
Probably.
Well, ESPN released a network that was all 3D. They would broadcast soccer games in 3D and stuff like that. I think it shut down in, 2 years?
God. I can't believe that was a thing people actually thought was going to take off.
But I'm not
Hey, you want to buy a $20,000 television just so that you can watch this awful gimmick that nobody actually likes?
That no one's ever liked except once. It was, but that tells you, like, how big Avatar was, where, like, it change the
I must have Avatar at home. I must be able to watch Avatar at home.
But Avatar was, like, I think still the highest grossing movie ever. So, like, I get it. Sure.
It's actually not adjusted for inflation. It's still Gone with the Wind.
How about the recent? I'm gonna lump these in. The recent sports, like the relaunches of NBC Sports Network and FS1, ESPN competitors.
Probably yeah, there's a lot of like you know, really big screw ups there. Like the Canadian guys are always gonna be my favorite. Yeah. Where it's like the, these two guys who hosted like the TSN version of SportsCenter and were super popular in Canada. It's like, well, let's bring them to America. And it's like, oh, well, but it's not, we don't live in Canada. Like,
and like, if like Dan Patrick and Olbermann left for Fox Sports in 1995, I'm not switching over to watch that.
Keith Olbermann literally did that and nobody watched it.
Nobody cared. And I think like, I bring this up because I had this thought. This is like a shower thought the other day. How bad did FS1 kind of screw up by just trying to be ESPN when in reality they probably just should have been like, we're going to focus hard on Big East basketball, MMA, and NASCAR on our talk shows. And like at least built like a niche following. So at least like you're beating test patterns and not paying Yard $1 billion.
It's never a good idea to just buy a bunch of ESPN personalities and think, because what people never realize about that is that ESPN has kind of a captive audience because they're the default. Like when you go to a gym, unless, you know, the guy who owns the gym is a right-wing Republican, what's the thing that's always going to be on television? Probably ESPN, because it's
I worked in multiple bars. You'll see the rules sometimes of what you can put on TV or whatever. It's always ESPN. Like ESPN's the safe thing to put on TV at any place where you have a TV in America. Because there's rarely something on there that's like controversial or anything like that. They have that. The other thing too is like everything's on ESPN. So like I'm watching ESPN because like the NBA's on there. Not because I enjoy Stephen A. Smith.
Well yeah, it's like, but ESPN has this sort of captive audience. So there's a lot of people who've been successful on ESPN. Because they're able to, like, you've got all these people who are just watching ESPN all day, and then they're kind of like a shithead who says a lot of, like, crazy stuff, but it draws an audience. It's almost like the radio, where, like, people used to just, like, leave the radio on all day, and then when somebody who said lots of crazy shit would come on, it would be like, well, I gotta listen to what this shit's about. Like, yeah. Half the battle in radio is riling people up, so that you know, you can make, like, they'll want to stick around for your crazy talk.
Yeah.
Doesn't work as a TV channel where people have to make a conscientious effort to change the channel to whatever you're on.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And like, so, like, when I think back to, like, what, you know, kind of went wrong with that, it's like, well, you didn't focus on the things that were already on your network enough. Why are you talking about a basketball game that's only on ESPN? That's stupid. Hype up what your properties are. That's what ESPN did so well. That's why they were successful. Because they had Big East basketball, and guess what? Big East basketball is a big deal in the 80s. Why? Because ESPN told you it was.
It was also like, they went out and got Big East basketball at a point where nobody watches the Big East anymore. Because, like, one, nobody really watches regular season college basketball anymore unless you've got, like, Zion Williams.
Yeah,
unless you've
got, look at the ratings. The NFL Combine just beat every sport on network TV this weekend, except I think the NBA and gymnastics.
Like nobody's actually interested. Like college basketball as a TV property is a thing that exists during March, and you're not gonna have it because only CBS gets. Like CBS and Turner have that, not you.
Yeah, and. But the thing is, too, you're not hyping up, like, you have UFC on your network. Why aren't you talking about that nonstop? Well, no one else cares about it. Well, they clearly have a fan base that does, and at least there you have an established hardcore fan base that'll go, well, I don't love Colin Cowherd, but he talks about UFC, and Mike don't, so I'm going to go over here.
Yeah.
So that was, like, my biggest issue with
it. It was also just, like, don't waste money on Colin Cowherd and Skip Bayless. Like, wait, like, use all of your money trying to get premier brands on.
Find the next one, because like it didn't go as well, but NBC Sports Network kind of found their niche, because like, well, we'll just show soccer and we'll do Men in Blazers a lot, And guess what? Like, it does okay, at least in terms of brand recognition. You know, I don't know the Premier League ratings, but I bet they're pretty decent for European soccer on cable TV.
They've definitely done better than Fox because they haven't lost nearly as much money.
Yeah. And with your NBC, like, you have the Olympics. So, like, at least every, 2 years, you're going to have people watching your network.
Yeah.
That's the other thing, too. Like, when NBC got, like, the Olympic license, they're pumping that shit on everything. Fox, like, why is Fox News not pumping up stuff that's on Fox Sports 1 or vice versa? You know what I mean? Like, they didn't do a good job of brand synergy. That's kind of my issue with, like, why FS1 failed. When I really think about it, was, like, they didn't just go all in on it and just admit what they have. So, pretty big bust.
Absolutely.
How about this one, Dan? Gus Johnson, soccer announcer. You remember this?
Ooh. Man, that is the classic example of the biggest mistake you can make is thinking that because a guy is good at, like, one type of play-by-play, that he can just do any sport. Just because, well, play-by-play is play-by-play. No, it is not. Like, I think especially with play-by-play, you really need to have some familiarity with the rules of what you're calling.
Yeah.
Because, oh my God, Gus Johnson knew nothing. He knew nothing about that sport.
Well, and Dan, think about, like, some of the better announcers in sports. They've been calling that sport for, like, most of their life. Like the Hawks TV announcer, we've probably seen him do Bob Rathman, right? Probably seen him do ACC basketball or whatever else. He's pretty good because he's been doing ACC basketball for 30, 40 years at this point. He's not just picking up a new sport, you know, halfway through his career. I think that was a big issue. And Gus, like, his career never really recovered, right? I guess he's just the Fox college football guy now. Doesn't even get to do NFL.
I don't think he's doing NFL anymore, no.
Yeah, just was, but maybe he wanted to just do college, so I kind of get that.
I don't think he just wanted to. I think Fox realized there was a they had to step back a little bit.
And then one more before we have to get out of here. Bob Knight. Remember Bob Knight on ESPN?
Like, hey, you know the sociopath who got ran out of college basketball for choking his players? Let's put him on television.
Yeah, his first year, he was, like, with Messberger, Billis, all the top guys. By second year, he's calling, like, American Conference games. And then I'm looking at, like, some highlights from what he did. He yelled at a fan for standing up in front of him while on air. Didn't understand how the shot clock worked. And didn't comment on the Mike Rice scandal. If you remember that, that's when Mike Rice, the coach at Rutgers, choked a player on video.
Yeah, I can't understand why he wouldn't want to talk about that.
Yeah. So, but those were some of the best bigger sports media busts I could find on short notice. So, and probably a lot more. Like, shit, we could do the whole show on it. Disaster that is FS1 and to a lesser extent NBC Sports Network, but I don't think NBC
NBC Sports Network I think has actually made money because for years they just had this very low budget and they didn't waste a lot of money.
Yeah, they did it the way FS1 should have done it, where they're like, all right, we're going to show soccer and hockey, let's talk about that a lot and those fans will come watch us.
Yeah, they just,
and by God.
Yeah, they built their thing around niche sports that had like a lot of fans. Or fans are crazy about.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Almost like, right, like if NBC was like, yeah, we love WWE, guess what? Those fans are probably going to watch you all the time.
Yeah.
Because you were nice to them once when, like, everyone else isn't. That's the other key. Think about, like, soccer, hockey, MMA. These are
disrespected sports.
Yes. If you
these
see
are
a
chip
cable
on
network,
their shoulder sports.
Yeah. If you see a cable network that's nice to you before you get popular, guess what? You're going to gravitate around them.
Yeah.
I'm sure there are hockey fans who are like, fuck it, I'm just going to watch the NBC Sports Network show.
I think that was always big for NASCAR, because NASCAR used to be on ESPN back in, like, in the 80s,
yeah.
And that's when NASCAR got popular. But that's back when ESPN was niche.
Yeah.
You know, that's back when ESPN was, you know.
Well, and Dan, think about this.
When not being on network television, like, major sports are on CBS or NBC or something. We're on stupid cable, but it's like, well, fuck the networks. We don't need them. We're good. Cable rules.
We're outlaw sport anyway.
Yeah.
Well, think about this, though, Dan. Think back to when FS1 relaunched and all that. Like, a big part of Fox Sports is NASCAR to this day. How many times have they even talked about NASCAR on those FS1 national shows? Rarely. Why? You just paid
because they hired a bunch of people from ESPN, and the only thing, like, ESPN is like, well, what do you talk about at ESPN? You talk about the NBA and you talk about the NFL.
Talk about the NFL, NBA, and you talk about, like, SEC football. And that's what you know about.
Yeah. And it's like, you can't do that on Fox because their college football properties are kind of shit. And they're all, like, stuck in one part of the country.
But also, if you sit there and hype up Oregon-Stanford, guess what? By the end of the week, if I watch your program, I'm going to be hyped for that game and watch it when maybe I wouldn't before. They didn't do that. They're hyping Alabama-Tennessee, which is on a completely different, you know, network. So that was my other issue. Like, don't talk about the things that are popular. Talk about the things you own that you can control. Like, if I was rebuilding a sports network, that'd be the first thing I did. It's like, if I didn't have NBA, then guess what? It don't really exist. Because no one who watches it's going to come over to me. That's the truth. And that's why FS1 failed. That's why they'll continue to fail.
Yeah. I agree.
So, yeah. So there you go. There were some of your biggest. Can you think of one more? One major?
Oh, Rick Barry! I mentioned him and then I didn't get into it. Yeah, Rick Barry was groomed for years in the NBA because, like, he was the most famous outspoken basketball player, Mr. Fundamentals, you know. Of anybody who ever won an NBA title, he probably is the only guy who ever won an NBA title pretty much on his own. Because that Warriors team was Rick Barry, like, I think it was the 75 Warriors. It was, or 74. It was Rick Barry and a bunch of fucking nobodies.
Yeah.
And he won the title that year. And he was terrible as an announcer because all he did was shit on everybody and say, well, he didn't take that. He didn't come around that curl crisp enough. He really is not. Oh, that jump shot's really not doing it. And he would just yell at anybody who missed a free throw because they didn't shoot it underhanded.
Do you think he.
And then finally he said something super racist with Bill Russell sitting next to him.
Do you think, though, he would have been better in, like, a Barkley-style role? Because, like, Barkley's been a huge success for Turner.
Yeah, he was painful to listen to as, like, a play-by-play guy because you can only hear so much of somebody just shitting on everything in front of him.
You've got to – it's, like, the reason, like, if I'm watching, like, NBA on ABC, I'm usually going Spanish announcers because, like, I don't want to hear Van Gundy and Mark Jackson bitch at the refs for 2 hours. I know the refs suck. I don't want to keep hearing it.
Like, at some point, it's just like, I can't listen to more of this.
No, and, like, you could get mad at Jackson or Van Gundy for doing that, but they're both former coaches. They've been bitching at refs for most of their lives. Of course it's what they're going to do when they announce.
Yeah, it's just like a one-track thing. But, you know, with Rick Barry, it was just like, every player sucks but me. I was the greatest player of all time.
Yeah.
It wasn't even like Shaq. Shaq was calling games, as bad as Shaq is as a studio announcer. Like, what if Shaq was like, just you having to listen to Shaq tell you how nobody ever dunked on him, even though there's plenty of tape of people dunking on him.
Or like someone hits a three and he's like, well, he doesn't have as many rings as me.
Or it's just like, what if Charles Barkley doesn't just talk about how great he was, he talks about how, like, other players from his era, like, Charles Barkley's thing is that, well, when I played, everybody was better than they are now.
Yeah, which is like, Dan, that's what we're going to do when we're old. So, like, yeah. I get that.
But, like, Rick Barry was like, oh, all the players who were playing when I was playing were shitty, too. I'm the only player who's ever been good.
Which, Rick, what does that make you? King of the shits?
Like Rick Barry, the only players Rick Barry ever said anything nice about were Jerry West and Wilt Chamberlain. It's like, well, okay, Wilt Chamberlain, like, scored 100 points. And Jerry West was the logo. Like, and as far as he's concerned, those are the only two players ever who are any good.
Yeah, and Wilt, a guy who, like, a lot of big men will tell you, like, was the best ever. never but
then,
was
like,
enough.
And then Rick Barry just like says, "Aha, watermelon eating Bill Russell. Look at him over there. He looks like a he's got a watermelon in his hands." And it was like, "Oh my god."
And Bill Russell doesn't strike me as a watermelon guy.
And Bill Russell also strikes me as the guy who'd slap the shit out of you if you called him a watermelon guy.
Yeah. Or like would give you a stare that would like half kill you.
Well, that's what he actually did.
So Dan, but yeah, there Rick Barry was there like a major college football one? We touched on Lou Holtz.
Like, well, Craig James, he killed five hookers. But he was on television forever.
Yeah.
But he was never any good at it. He was on television.
They never put Spurrier
years.
On TV. That's why I said Spurrier never got a TV gig. Maybe he never wanted one.
Have you ever heard Spurrier speak for longer than 5 minutes?
No, maybe. That's
yeah, he's awful good. At it. He's terrible at public speaking.
But Spurrier was like.
Now Bobby Bowden's the one who does surprise me, but he stayed in coaching so long that it's like, okay, you're hiring an 80-year-old to be on television.
You've already got Lou Holtz. Being the old man on there. Yeah, I can't think of like an example for game day because they've kind of nailed it in recent memory. Unless there's like a random.
Well, Craig James used to be on game day and he was off.
Yeah, that's kind of it because I can't, you know. College football is probably. There probably are more busts, but no major ones because of, like, how regional.
Yeah, because you have so, like, if you're ever watching, like, ESPN3, like, maybe you cheer for an FCS team or you cheer for, like, a G5 team.
Okay, so you're gambling.
Yeah, and you pop on, like, and watch the ESPN3 games. There's a lot of just god-awful color commentators. Like, yeah. Al Groh does, like, ESPN3 games like for the ACC, like you know when Wake
like
Forest
Duke
will play Old
William
Dominion, stuff like that, and it's like Al Groh will be calling the games like in that Mid-Atlantic region, and he'll call a lot of FCS games. Like so, like if you watch a lot of James Madison, you've probably seen a lot of you've heard a lot of Al Groh, and it's like he is horrible. He is one of the worst announcers I've ever heard, and the only guy worse than him might be John Bunting, another guy who calls all the same region because he's a former UNC coach, and he's terrible. But you know what? The only people hearing him are psychopaths like me, who, you know, probably have it on mute anyway.
Yeah, so like, that's why we're not counting, like...
So you have plenty of chances to find out who's actually good before you put him up in the main booth on college football.
Yeah, and, like, that's why we wouldn't count, like, even though he's been with the Hawks forever and I do love him, like, Dominique's not a very good... Dominique was on national TV. Everybody would say he's one of the worst announcers ever. Because he just says Hawks games. It's like, well, me and, like, four other people watch him. And, like, we're not going to get mad at Dominique because he's the GOAT.
He's the greatest Hawk of all time.
Yes, the Hawk, if you will. So yeah, I think that was some sports media, but I'd like to maybe next weekend we'll do some sports busts outside of sports. So we mentioned like Magic Johnson, but like Shaq's acting career, Kobe Bryant. I'm sure Michael Buffer said something weird at some point. Hulk Hogan owned a pasta restaurant. So maybe that's some stuff we could look at maybe next week.
Oh man, failed ventures.
Failed ventures by athletes outside of sports, or maybe within sports, because Isaiah Thomas did wreck multiple teams in an entire league.
Yeah.
And a college program. People forget that he was at UCF and like gave a salary back, or sort of Florida Atlantic or something, I think. So. Now that'd be fun, like athletes who excelled at being an athlete but failed elsewhere. Maybe that's something we can look at next week.
All right. Yeah. I like it.
Well, yeah.
And on that, you know, and on that note, thank you for your patronage, as always. We love you, love you, love you. And play the music, Jason.